Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Christopher Collins. Christopher Collins is publisher and editor-in-chief of Low Ghost Press, former co-director of the TNY Presents Performance Series, and former managing editor of the New Yinzer. He is the book reviewer for Pittsburgh Magazine, manager of Caliban Bookshop, and owner of Desolation Row Records and CDs. His poetry collections include King Everything and Liturgy of Streets, both by Six Gallery Press, The Book of Names by Low Ghost Press, and his latest collection, Last Call, by Speed and Briscoe Books. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for being here today.
Hi, Renee. Thanks for having me.
Well, do you want to start us off with some poems?
Sure. This is called The Pittsburgh Baedeker. Isn't it wonderful? I can open a Baedeker and know the brilliant, wool-clad derrieres of Byron, Voltaire, and Dumas got down to business on the banks of Lake Geneva, rutting in the aromatic mud with the invisible, little lapping sounds like those of a kitten at its milk, the overt suggestions, the red tip of the world's tongue, tickling at my heart by way of a well-scrubbed ear. And here I am, tacking the Allegheny to a white pegboard, expressing myself in the precise tones of a busted muffler. Did you know the Aegishorn is the uppermost peak of a ridge separating the Great Aletsch Glacier from the Rhone Valley? From here, the Alps are breathtaking, ducking their pearly heads behind K&L gates, stroking the Roberto Clemente, fingers facile as Anton Karas's upon this golden zither. I brush the hair from your eyes at PPG Place and check my teeth for Servalat. This is called 12 East Reed Street, and this is a Baltimore poem. Your note said, don't be late and bring some beer. Dinner is assured. And standing there in the hallway's damp light, I did feel assured by the delicious curves of your southpaw script, the coming chill of another shaggy season, and the threadbare carpet straining to keep separate my eager, feathered feet and the creaking hardness of this too solid living. I throw cold bottles in a bag and fairly fall down flights of stairs. I am undone and remade like some old scraggle of a grandfather's sweater by thoughts of you in your tiny kitchen, cuttings of onion, tomato, and mysterious roots and things, I know not the names, dipping our quiet, loving talk in perfumes of black earth and rain. The sky has that proud look about it. It's ready to burst. There comes from the street so many sounds and voices, a rage of living, baby. Listen. Oh, listen. I carry in my wallet little wraps of words, promises, invisible to our eyes, but love. They are so obvious to this heart. So this is a really recent one, this week. Recent. And this is kind of a response to a poem by the local poet Jason Baldinger. This is called The Whiskey Rebellion. There is a line stretching from the men's room all the way to the jukebox. It does something to the music, this anxious shuffling of human requirement. The schwa, schwa of shoes sweeping soft leather across the pleated floor. The multi-headed conversations colliding, phantom jets spilling a white wake of suds in your lady's lap. You must administer the right ammunition to quell the uprising. Else you are engulfed, arson or amber. These are the long nights we will fail to remember, the nagging nights that push at the corners of closed eyes, the ghosts that give themselves up and go. I am tattooing the tatters of your memory into this soggy napkin we call poem, damp from the years fallen in a flood from such kissable fingertips. This next poem is called Undressing. A Girl Becomes the City. I could call her skin so many things. Winter smoke rising across a skein of bridges. The rolling red light of cop cars down an alley of pursuit. The chill reticence of flight prickling the raised gate of a parking garage. The creamy scrim of river dross mucked by a colony of gulls, a quiver with the expectation of feeding. A horror of children crawling upon the melted fields, a silence of confusing, shushed gestures, ciphering the hieroglyphs of our disappeared economy. My every frail attempt at calling into your eye the inexpressible, the confounding straits of love that plague my tongue. Your small body there, standing naked with the window behind you, and the city straightening its spine as the dusky shadows quell. It's only that in the moment, I could not distinguish one face from the other.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Christopher Collins. So something that's immediately apparent in your work is that Pittsburgh and a sense of place figure prominently. How does that influence your writing?
It's a good question. How does it? Basically, my relationship with the city is an ongoing. It's a work in progress itself. But mostly I think of writing and poetry as being a witness and celebrating what we see every day to make sure that that is somehow marked in time. So the people that I know, the streets that I walk, the city itself, it necessarily is what the poems are about. It didn't start that way when I started writing, but it became that. It developed into that, and now it's just the natural sort of occurrence in the writing is the city.
What happened that prompted that shift?
It was a gradual sort of acceptance of the city. I grew up here. I've been here all my life. And growing up, a lot of people leave the city. I've seen that happen. I've watched it. Most of my very close friends have left. So it created a sort of contentious relationship with the city for a while that it sort of chased away people that I cared about or acted as kind of a, I don't want to say prison so much as something that held me in place, other responsibilities that kept me here. So it took a while to kind of come to terms with that. And as that process happened personally, it sort of started playing itself out in the poetry, where exact places begin to show up, not just a vague reference to a house or a building or a person, but very specific references to those people and places. And once that started happening, I think I felt I began to come into my own as the writer. I understood what I was doing much more.
That's a lot of power to ascribe to a place. I mean, even the way you're talking about it now. I mean, in poems, you often address, like, you converse with the city or you say something is to Pittsburgh. But even as you're talking about it now, you're really characterizing it as like a force.
Yes. I would say Pittsburgh is a force.
Pittsburgh is a force.
Yes. Maybe not the Pittsburgh Pirates at the moment, but the city is. I think that can be the case for most cities. If you're from there, you're always from there, no matter where you go. Had I left the city, I think I would still be writing about Pittsburgh. It's where I began writing. It's where so many close relationships and my family and all of that are. So I think I would always necessarily be coming back to it in the writing. But the writing has sort of been a space to explore the city more. Certainly, if you just look at the poems, you would think I go out a lot more than I actually do. certainly to more bars than I actually go to. it's become very much what the writing is about, no matter what shape the writing is, whether it's a poem, an essay, a book review. It all sort of plays into that.
It's feeding that exploration.
It does. Trying to understand the place and your place in that place, really, is what it kind of boils down to, I think. Certainly for me.
That's an interesting perspective, and I think it gets to your work a lot, of your place in that place. Mm-hmm. Let's hear some more poems.
Okay. This is called Whiskey from When You Were Born. And this was originally written for a reading I did a few months ago, actually. Whiskey from When You Were Born. Oh, no. I've lost track of the last pour, and for all I know, it's the first time come around again. Will you please let me know if I'm embarrassing myself? If I'm blazing brilliantly as I believe, then please do not interrupt. There are people here who need to know these things. All the things whispering round this clutched and smoke-blown air. Oh, life. Oh, my. Honey hands all in my hair. What will you pay for these kisses, my love? All the gooey green dug from deep in the wet caves of these cushions? All the tender red rages sizzling in your solar plexus? All the brown, beery burps lurching from a new dance move from down, deep down in our bellies? Ah, la, ta-da. We are magic, how we make whole liquid worlds disappear. Are you my bunny, baby? Be my bunny, baby. Let's do the lover's leap. How late it's become. Now comes the creeping daylight, and all the mortal shocks, and all that jazz. The bloodshot dawn is such a cruel friend. Yes, it reassures that, yes, we are alive, and yes, didn't we stir up some very fine nonsense in the night? Yes. Yes. Yes, you are so very lovely in this newborn light, love. We are spent. Oh, love, we are the only currency to hold its value in this new world. This is called Honey Wilder. I cannot think of you without thinking of the Carnegie Library in Oakland and the many nights hung over in the stacks, the secret card games and Frank Zappa records. Will history even care we slipped away our ships in the break room, the seasons shooting across the sky in front of us, drinking vending machine coffee on the steps in the snow? I read everything back then, just because I could. I admit, I do not travel well. But why should I apologize? It's not like things are better somewhere else. Distance does not equal happiness. This is something I should have learned at a younger age. But thank God I did learn it eventually. It only cost me every friend I had. You are not a shape I can make with my mouth. The temptation is to always use the past tense, simply because it is easier. I had my hand in there for days, and when I pulled it out, wham! Everything changed. And then everything was everything again. You promised me honey wilder than any tongue had known. And yes, we shall slip loose these bodies, and only then will we understand. This is titled Obituary. This train hauls typewriters and lemon wedges, delivering a toddy or two, sweet rain on the country. The war dead are grateful. I split the taps three ways and hold the best part to the light. You put hands on my chest, speakers in the windows, and pump joy down the hillside, over the tracks, automobiles, girls in bright dresses trade skin for good times. Answer the phone when I call. We'll crush birds to our bare backs. operate on clouds and buildings, all of glass grow out of this eye. Their bodies gone, we must always venerate the names, pulse poems in pubs and celebrate smoke and call, Digby is done. Mooney too. And we swing from bars with tiny hopes chandeliered. Every little light is music of glasses spilling blood and whiskey. What's it to you? It's a city. It's all cities. I could never leave any more than I could leave your bed this morning. And memories beating at the windows, flashing deep as tunnels, the great sharp machines digging under the river. Dear heart, there is so much we need never say, but let's say it anyway, and all the time, love. This is a poem for Robert Frank, the photographer. This is entitled Parade, Hoboken, New Jersey. Robert, remember the older pair from the bar after the parade, and how that dim room lit entirely by a lonely little jukebox somehow made the women beautiful and precious to us, as we hung the day on the glass hook of the night and tilted our ears at their heavy mouths, cheeks and lips pale, full, wet with our money. Robert, I recall the quality of your talk, and when you invited the two ladies together to dance, blushing and busting laughter against the old walls and the photographs of the old people still hung on those walls, and maybe you didn't notice, but I fed a five's worth into that smoky juke, and with an elbow against the warped red lights, I leant and loved you, Robert, and watched the one in the fading blue shift spin out of your arms, eyes an explosion, soft with so much gratitude. This one does not have a title as of yet, so here you go. We were talking about forgiveness. Or we weren't talking at all. And in the darkness of the place, I was only thinking it. What could be more difficult, more required? But this was merely a scattering of salt, errant crumbs of unspoken regret, all that came between the man and me. And you had just taken a long pull on the pint, and our friend was with us from the other town. And the two of you were talking, not about forgiveness or loss or family, but just talking and being human. What could be more difficult, more required? While I studied the shapes scratched into the tabletop, some approximating words, others their intent. You must have said something then, or you took my hand and clutched it to your belly and pulled me from the water I could hardly tread, into this thing you were building all on your own with a secret reserve of wood and grease. Our friend was back with a fresh round, and strangers moved and made noise and touched. And when did all of these people arrive? I should probably pay closer attention to this world. At the very least, I should look it straight in the eye and be honest. The subterfuge is hard to shed. Perhaps removing my jacket is enough. After all, it is getting hot in here.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Christopher Collins. So I wonder if you can talk a little about the writing of your poems, because you have this, a lot of these sort of ordinary moments, these daily moments that you were saying before you try to include.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how you decide how those moments turn into the poems for you. What's that process like?
You're asking hard questions, Renee.
I think you're up to it.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends poem to poem. Sometimes it's just you have a line stuck in your head for a day or two and you want to use it, so you sit down and figure out what goes around it, how best to use it. Is it a line to begin with? Is it a finishing line? Is it something that needs shape around it? often I will start writing poems just with a person in mind. There are a lot of poems that I write that are directly addressed to people. And that's usually just a matter of feeling I had something to communicate to them or to respond to something that they've said or done or just who they are as a person. Those are generally my favorite poems, just to start with somebody's name and then just go and see what happens.
Do you have one of those to read?
I can read one of those. Here's one. This is called Poem Addressed to Jacqueline Siegel. Jacqueline was a local poet. She is in Arizona now. Jack, these hard yellow days you never get used to. They trumpet around the front lawn and wake the neighbors, get the dogs barking. I've spent many good days writing poems outside bars, watching the old neighborhood and the girls who live there now. If we're not careful, nostalgia creeps up on us like a house cat let loose in the yard. And then it's only the drinking that helps. No one ever tells you there's an airplane falling out of the sky, and every day you are on that plane and falling with it. So I make phone calls and pray for wings. I watch the sky for fiery debris and for my face in a cloud. Jack, I look for your face too, but here on the ground where it does me the most good.
I'm interested in that idea of communicating, because I think that when you have these moments that are sort of cataloged, there's a review of King Everything that Bill O'Driscoll wrote for the City Paper. And he says that your poetry is like poetry is journalism as diary. But I think that there's a sense of sort of sadness or almost elegy in the poems. And it does feel like there's like a loss or something that you're sort of communicating through there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I feel that a lot when I'm writing. As I've said, a lot of what I write being directed towards other people, generally they are people who are not here anymore. They have left, whether it was Jacqueline or I have a lot of poems to Jonathan Moody, another poet who used to be here. There are quite a few of those, and I think when anybody leaves that is a friend you have a relationship with, suddenly you're left having all of these things that were not expressed. And they don't have to be particularly deep things, not like the love of your life or whatever, but they're still, you see something while you're walking down the street or going to work and it recalls that person to you and you want to say, oh, hey, I saw this thing the other day and we should go check that out. And I thought of you, and you don't have that ability anymore to do that. I mean, you could email the person or make a phone call, but who does that? We just write poems.
Yeah, I think you can hear that very personal nature in the work. Let's hear some more.
Okay. This is titled The World of Antiques. Sorry I missed the ceremony and how it all came apart. Feathers in the fountain. You have no choice but forgiveness. How'd it happen? Your teeth in my cheek and the sun exploding hourly. Oh, how I've missed that mouth. Tuesday morning and the weather we hide from. We stay in bed and order out for ice cream, inviting the cats in for licks. Kissing you is writing poems on airplanes. This one is poem addressed to Jonathan Moody. Jonathan, can we agree on heaven? We've all seen maps to places that don't exist. Poems are just more maps leading us out of here. Historical prints of American cities. Our voices damp in degrees of gray. static and snow and traffic noise. There is love talking in the sound. The sky, another lover with hands all over, pulling water from the earth. Our mouths glisten with wet. The ice wants communion with your body. The winter wants you, as do I.
I hear these really nice lines in these moments, like the ice wants communion with your body. You have a lot of places where you sort of move out like that, where you, like, will history care if we slept through our shift in the break room? And mm-hmm. and these are the long nights we will fail to remember. I like those movements into like this larger space that happen.
Yeah, I'm the best sort of criticism advice I ever got when I was taking workshops at the university. I was going over some poems with the person running the class, and she said every line should be important. Every line should hold a surprise. That's a bit of advice that really stayed with me. I use a lot of sort of long baggy lines, and that comes more from reading out more. But my favorite stuff is when a line just sort of appears and hangs there. Mm-hmm. Poets like Frank O'Hara, Kenneth Patchen, even Paul Simon in some of his songs are able to kind of just hang a line there. And it's a line that shouldn't make sense. Maybe if you think too hard about it, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But in the moment that it happens, it's just kind of perfect. And that's, as a person writing these things, keeps me excited and interested because I don't know where it comes from. It just sort of pops, and then it's quite beautiful when it does.
Yeah, it is. The poetry of Christopher Collins. Thank you so much for being here, Chris.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time every Wednesday night at 7:30 for Prosody 91.3 WYEP.